Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the
lobby. Oh, you betcha. Time to talk movies. Alan Adams from The Main Edge joins us. Happy Monday, Mr. Adams.
And to you as well.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
How was your weekend?
Oh, it was pretty good. Our squirrel saga is ongoing.
Still?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. No, we did catch a couple.
So it's not just one who's taken up.
Well,
residence.
See, my ingenious wife came up with a spot to put our have a heart trap, but we determined that it was very possible that we were getting outside squirrels and not like drawing the squirrels from inside our house, and so we had a gentleman come over and set up a situation today because we continued to hear noises inside the walls and whatnot. And he came by this morning and set something up, already got one. So, we'll see how it goes. The big fear at this point is that, there might be little ones.
Oh dear.
We don't know. And we haven't heard them. So that's probably a positive.
Yeah.
But you just don't know. And, right. And if they're real little, then there's no real way to get them out, which right. is... You know, it's bleak, but at the end of the day, like, you know, it's my house.
Red, yes. I was happy to let you stay for a little while, but the right. time has come.
You know, leave, please.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed. We'll see how it goes. So squirrels. Squirrels have squirrels. Been a big part of a big part of my life over the last week or so. But other than that, we're good.
But you did get to see some movies.
I did. Yeah. I did. Some pretty good ones, actually, good. Well, as far as that goes.
What should we talk about first?
Let's talk about the animated film that I saw. So I went to see this movie called The Bad Guys. It's apparently based on a series of children's books by an Australian author. It's from DreamWorks Animation. I had pretty low expectations. The reality is, like, you know, once you get past like Pixar, it's like, oh, they're all kind of the same. Like, whether you're talking about DreamWorks or Sony or, you know, Blue Sky or any of those places. My expectations were low, and they were tempered further, by the fact that, you know what I forgot, last week was school vacation week.
So
I rolled in. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll go to the super early showing with the ones where there's never anybody there. And I go and I'm like, oh no, there are definitely people here. That being said, I will say I find that kids movies tend to be a more enjoyable experience when there are actually kids in the room.
Sure.
You know, like they just bring a very positive sort of energy, you know. And you know, I always feel a little bad being like, you know scary big hairy dude sitting by himself watching the kids movie. But ultimately the thing about it was, it was actually pretty fun. Got a great, it has a nice look, surprisingly, solid storytelling, and a marvelous voice cast. So you put it all together and you've got just what's a really pretty good movie going experience. The basic gist is, the titular bad guys is a crew of anthropomorphic animals. They're a gang of criminals. They rob banks and do the whole shebang, led by Mr. Wolf, voiced by Sam Rockwell.
Love it.
His best bud is a snake who's a safecracker, Mr. Snake, Mark Maron.
Oh.
Their hacker is Miss Tarantula, also known as Webs. That's voiced by Awkwafina. Their enforcer, the muscle, Mr. Piranha, voiced by Anthony Ramos, best known for his work on Hamilton. And last but not least, Mr. Shark, their master of disguise, voiced by Craig Robinson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, just an absolutely stacked cast. So they're, you know, they're the bad guys, and they are known as the bad guys, and, you know, the authorities have been trying for years to capture them, but failing, at every turn. But what happens is the Mr. Wolf is goaded into an ill-advised attempt at stealing a prestigious award known as the Golden Dolphin by the words of Governor Foxington, voiced by Zazie Beetz. So he goes to the gala in which the award is going to be presented to the guinea pig philanthropist Professor Marmalade, voiced by Richard Ayoade of the IT crowd and all this. So, like I said, wonderful cast. But it turns out it's a trap, and they get caught. But Professor Marmalade is like, what if I can teach the bad guys to be good guys? The experiment commences. But there's a whole lot more going on here than you might expect. It's pretty funny. It's very much very much kid oriented humor. Enough stuff for the adults, but not in a pandering way. It's not like, it's just like every once in a while they're just like, it's almost like it's not necessarily aimed at adults, but rather the more sophisticated children out there. I number myself among them. Also kind of a solid heist movie, like some real Ocean's 11 kind of vibes to it, in a very positive way. And again, like I said, the voice cast is just outstanding. It looks great. It's very funny. Some pretty good music. Like, it's just, I was expecting very little, and what I got was a movie that was actually quite good.
Nice. That's the bad guys. What's up next?
Let's talk about The Northman. Because I make my living, at least in part, writing about movies. And I like to think I have pretty good taste. The reality is, the critical realm writ large tends to come to agreement about most movies. That's just the nature of it. Like, if a movie's good, people are going to say it's good. If it's bad, people are going to say it's bad. That sort of thing. However, I think we all have our blind spots. We all have the filmmakers or actors or what have you who, even when you can recognize the inherent value of what's being made, it just doesn't resonate with you. And I think that's where I'm at with Robert Eggers. I've seen The Witch, I've seen The Lighthouse, and I've now seen The Northman. All three of these movies are undeniably technically proficient. This is a guy who knows how to make movies. He makes excellent aesthetic choices. He's got a very distinct vision. He elicits strong performances from his actors, and it just doesn't land for me. And so this was a really tough review for me to write, because watching the movie, I could see all the positive values, the positive attributes to this movie, and yet it never quite clicked. And this one in particular should have, because it's basically Hamlet with Vikings, and I love both those things,
right?
Big, bloody action sequences and palace intrigue and all this stuff. And it's just like, all these pieces are things that should appeal to me. And for whatever reason, it just left me a little bit cold. Now, the basic gist, we're in the year 895, in a small Viking kingdom on an island in the North Atlantic. We've got the names are just ridiculous, so I'm going to try to make sure. We have King Orvandil Warraven, played by Ethan Hawke, who's just returned from wartime to his kingdom, reunites with his wife Queen Gudrun, played by Nicole Kidman, and his young son Amleth. His overseas forays, they were successful, but there's still some weird tension between Orvandil and his brother Fjolnir, played by Claes Bang. And that tension is sort of exacerbated because the fool, Hymir, played by Willem Dafoe, makes some inappropriate sorts of comments, as fools are wont to do. Amleth is being prepared to assume the throne, undergoing a sort of... I don't know what the Viking equivalent is of a peyote ceremony or a sweat lodge, but it's that sort of thing where he has visions of Yggdrasil, the world tree, and his place on it and all this stuff. In the immediate aftermath of that, it happens in the first few minutes, so I guess it's not really a spoiler. Fjolnir kills Alvendar. And so he usurps the kingdom and tries to kill young Amleth, but Amleth is able to steal a boat and row away across the North Atlantic. We leap forward many years in time. Amleth has now grown, and he was taken in by a group of berserker warriors, and so that is who he is now. His adult Amleth is Alexander Skarsgård, who's phenomenal in this movie. He winds up doing battle and taking over a village. They take a number of prisoners to be sold as slaves, and he hears that some of the slaves are intended to go to Fjolnir, against whom he has obviously, vowed vengeance. He's going to, save his mother, kill his uncle and take the crown. I don't know if any of this sounds familiar to you. So he sets out, he disguises himself as a slave, where he befriends a Slavic sort of earth goddess witch type named Olga, played by Anya Taylor-Joy. They wind up back on, under Fjolnir's rule, and he and the two of them sort of conspire to help Amleth exact his revenge as he sees fit. But there are numerous obstacles in the way, and there are a few unexpected turns that the story takes that will likely surprise anyone who hasn't read Hamlet. look, it's like I said, and I need to be clear about this. I recognize how accomplished this film is. I really do. It looks great. They're on location in Iceland, so it's this beautiful, sort of blasted and bleak kind of landscape. The action sequences are incredibly visceral and bloody, with a feel of real sort of tactile realism that you don't necessarily get in a ton of action sequences these days, which was really cool. The performances are great. I mean, it's got the cast is stacked. Skarsgård was wonderful. This was a really great part for him. Anya Taylor-Joy, always wonderful. Defoe, Ethan Hawke, I mean, Nicole Kidman, like I could go on and on. Like, just Oscars all over the place in this cast. And it's one of those things where it's like, I recognize that it's a me problem. Do you know what I mean?
Like, no,
it's
maybe,
but seriously, because like, you look at something like this and you look at a director like Eggers, who has a fairly limited filmography, and yet all of these incredibly talented actors keep coming back. Mm-hmm. Like, they keep wanting to work with him. So there's something there. Again, I don't know if I found it to be lacking some sort of soul or what it was. Like, that's a critic's worst nightmare, when you can't actually articulate fully what it is that your issue is. But I find myself struggling with that, because again, like, all the pieces are there. Like, this is a movie that I should love, and I didn't love it. Like, I'm not gonna pan it. Like, it's not that kind of movie. Like, it definitely warrants people's attention, and I think it's going to be very well received by a lot of people, including a lot of people whose tastes I generally share. Mm. But for whatever reason, it just fell a little bit flat. So all that being said, if Hamlet with Vikings sounds like your thing, this movie's probably going to be your thing.
All right. Finally, I can't wait to hear what you think of Nicolas Cage going very meta.
Man, I've been looking forward to this movie for a while, as someone who is a big fan of the Nicolas Cage experience writ large. I like him when he's doing his Oscar worthy performance stuff. I love it when he's on movie 5 of 6 on a 9-month sojourn in Romania. Like, I like everything in between. Like, I don't think there's as big, we use the word range for actors. I don't know that there is an A-list actor today whose filmography runs as wide a gamut as Nicolas Cage, a reality that is among the many addressed in The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which is his latest film. It's you said it, man. It is meta, because Nicolas Cage is playing himself. He is playing a hyper-stylized version of himself, although it's difficult to tell how stylized
right,
because it's Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
The basic gist is he's Nicolas Cage, Hollywood movie star, kind of struggling. He's kind of at a crossroads in his career. You know, he's been passed over for sort of these big name roles, and he's you know, the stuff that he feels is more indicative of his talents than the other kinds of stuff that he's been making. He's also having a tough time at home, like with his family. He's trying to maintain a relationship with his ex-wife Olivia. She's played by Sharon Horgan. In the movie, he met her when she was the makeup artist on Captain Corelli's Mandolin. One of just a staggering number of Nicolas Cage, like put it this way, these Easter eggs are not cage free. Like these
right.
are,
oh, right.
yeah, it nice. Is, yeah, right. I felt I'm very proud of that. And he's also struggling to connect with his teenage daughter Addie, played by Ellie Sheen. I'm sorry, Lily Sheen, because he's so self-absorbed and so narcissistic that you know, he can't really you know, connect with her in the way that he wants to. Oh, and just as an aside, he has a very active and antagonistic relationship with Nikki. Also Nicolas Cage,
right.
the imaginary, younger, more successful version of himself that he has a number of conversations and at least one fairly physical scene. I'm just going to put it that way. It gets weird, Rich. I'm sure you're shocked to hear that.
I saw this too. Our friend Mark Duplass tweeted earlier today, Marky will one day be referenced in a Nicolas Cage movie.
Yep. Yeah, no, there is definitely a Duplass Brothers mention in there, but yeah, so he's lost another role. He has a sit down with actual like big name director David Gordon Green, like he's actually in the movie, and is like, I don't know what to do. Goes to talk to his agent Fink, played by Neil Patrick Harris, and he's like, well, I got this offer for you. It's this vague sort of invitation to attend a Spanish billionaire's birthday party as the guest of honor. And for this, he will be paid the sum of $1 million. and Cage initially balks and then is like, but then there's an incident at his daughter's birthday party. And he's like, you know what? To hell with it. I'm going to Spain. And so he goes to Spain. And that's where he meets Javi Gutierrez, played by the wonderful Pedro Pascal. And turns out Javi's a big fan, like real big. While the relationship starts off slowly, they soon sort of bond over their shared love of certain films. Anyone who is someone like this Nicolas Cage is going to be attracted to someone who so clearly adores Nicolas Cage. That relationship starts to build. But here's the thing, Rich. Turns out Javi may have come into his riches in some less than savory and less than legal ways. And so before you know it, a pair of CIA agents played by Tiffany Haddish and Ike Barinholtz have enlisted Nicolas Cage to get closer to Javi in an effort for them to shut down his operation once and for all. And as you might imagine, this becomes more and more complicated as Nicolas and Javi get closer, as they work on their screenplay together. a screenplay, I might add, whose development is reflected very directly in the progress of the movie that you're watching. Like, I mean, just so many layers. Look, it's a showcase for Nicolas Cage. And as such, it is wildly successful. It is super funny. It is super smart. It is a level of self-awareness that I don't know that any other A-lister could pull off. Like Nicolas Cage, for all of his faults, all of his eccentricities, he's a dude who knows who he is. And this movie is very much a celebration of that, good, bad, and ugly. Pascal is wonderful, as he always is, just a wonderful sort of... like a buddy comedy vibe between the two of them. The supporting cast up and down the call sheet is just spectacular. But again, it's so smart. It's so meticulously constructed. So many wonderful pulls from Craig Cage's career, both you know, whether it's like clips from his movies or memorabilia, line drops, name drops, you name it, it's just all there. And it's like I said, it's wildly funny. And if you have any affinity for Nicolas Cage, any iteration of Nicolas Cage, you should check this movie out, because I got to tell you, it's the most literal fun I've had in a movie theater this year.
I'm looking forward to
it. So good, man.
Okay, thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
Good luck with those squirrels.
Yeah, thank you.
It's Alan Adams talking movies.